IBM.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your coronavirus update from the Recording Library of West Texas for Wednesday, December 16th, 2020, from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael. Here are some of the articles that we'll be reading today. Vaccine confidence is surging, U.S. Health Secretary says. U.S. has surplus of monoclonal antibody treatments for COVID-19, Azar says. Despite confidence of imminent stimulus deal, many details still need to be sorted out and timing is unclear. Coronavirus is adding to delays for the U.S. Postal Service this holiday season. And then we'll have a few articles we'll read portions of from the Texas Tribune, including Texas has $2 billion in COVID relief funds still waiting to spend, left to spend. Advocacy groups are anxiously waiting. As COVID-19 vaccine arrives in Texas's hard-hit border areas, experts warn vaccinated people could still spread the virus. An eviction moratorium expires at the end of the month, but thousands of Texans are still not able to afford rent. Ahead of the holiday season, Texas's ICU capacity is the lowest since the start of the pandemic. And vaccinations are underway for Texas's frontline healthcare workers. I can't believe this is happening, one says. First, we'll begin with the numbers. From the Odessa American, Ector County total cases both confirmed and probable, 10,880. Ector County negative, 36,740 out of 48,149 tested, 529 pending, 160 deaths. Recovered, 9,103. Active, 1,607. ECISD daily cases, 12 students, 7 staff. From the Midland Reporter-Telegram, according to the Midland Health Department, as of Tuesday, the number of confirmed cases moved to 9,587. However, another 136 unconfirmed cases were reported from Monday. That increased the number of unconfirmed cases going back to November 21st to 2,434, and the total number of cases, confirmed and unconfirmed, to 12,021. Previous Reporter Telegram articles show the number of cases topping 10,000 on November 30th and 11,000 on December 7th. The City of Midland also confirmed Tuesday that the 171st Midland County resident died of COVID, a man in his 90s. From the Texas Tribune, average new cases in Texas decreased by 1,198 confirmed cases compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On December 15th, 14,569 new cases were reported. Hospitalizations in Texas increased by 444 patients compared with a week ago. As of December 15th, 9,472 Texans are hospitalized for the coronavirus. Average new deaths increased by 11 deaths compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On December 15th, 205 new deaths were reported. Now we'll take a look at coronavirus briefs. The United States could have two coronavirus vaccines by the time the week is over. Moderna's vaccine was found highly effective in a detailed review by Food and Drug Administration scientists and appears to be on track for approval by regulators. But a grueling battle is still ahead as states continue to grapple with a high level of hospitalizations. California is ordering thousands of body bags as it undergoes perhaps the most intense and urgent moment since the beginning of this pandemic, Governor Gavin Newsom said Tuesday. The FDA has authorized the first rapid coronavirus test that can be taken at home without a prescription and yields immediate results. Another rapid home test kit was approved last month, but it required a prescription from a doctor. 2 million Pfizer doses and 5.9 million Moderna doses allocated for next week, U.S. Health Secretary says. 20 million doses of Moderna vaccine will be delivered by the end of the month, Operation Warp Speed official says. No serious side effects reported after 1,600 vaccinations, New York City commissioner says. U.S. retail sales slumped to 1.1% in November, more than expected, the Commerce Department reported Wednesday as the pandemic kept early holiday shoppers home across the country. The World Health Organization warns high risk of further resurgence of COVID-19 across Europe in early 2021. Nearly 16.7 million coronavirus cases and 303,000 fatalities have been reported in the United States since February. Major CEOs support requiring employees to get COVID-19 vaccine, poll finds. McConnell says Hill leaders have made major headway toward a stimulus deal. Top Senate Democrat Chuck Schumer says the finish line is in sight on COVID-19 relief agreement. GOP senator says a stimulus deal could come by Friday. The Frisco Bowl, the first scheduled game of the college football's postseason, the bowl season in the U.S. has been canceled due to COVID-19. Now here are some short articles. Vaccine confidence is surging, U.S. Health Secretary says, from CNN's Naomi Thomas. During an Operation Warp Speed briefing Wednesday, Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar said he's heartened to see that Americans' vaccine confidence is rising substantially. Azar cited an ABC poll this week, which said more than 8 in 10 Americans say they plan to take the vaccine, and an announcement from Kaiser saying more than 70% of Americans definitely or probably will take the vaccine. So just vaccine confidence is surging, Azar said. Azar said that there is still much work to do to ensure that all Americans understand the value of the vaccines, but it's clear that many Americans are learning that these vaccines are safe and extraordinarily effective. He said he expects vaccine confidence to increase as more people get vaccinated. As the word gets out, as they talk to their friends, their colleagues, their neighbors, vaccine confidence in the United States will just increase by word of mouth, by trusted sources, every single day, he said. U.S. has surplus of monoclonal antibody treatments for COVID-19, Azar says, from CNN's Shelby Lynn Erdman. Not enough COVID-19 patients are asking for or receiving monoclonal antibody treatment, Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar said on Tuesday. We have a surplus of these monoclonal antibodies right now, the Regeneron and Lilly antibodies. And what's happening is people are waiting too long to seek out the treatments until they show up at the hospital. And by then, it may be too late in order to get the benefit of these antibody treatments that beat back the spread of the virus, Azar told CNBC in an interview. What is the treatment? Monoclonal antibodies are laboratory-made proteins that mimic the immune system's ability to fight off harmful antigens such as viruses, the FDA said in a statement after approving the Eli Lilly treatment. It's designed to block the virus's attachment and entry into human cells. The treatment involves an infusion, and Azar acknowledged there's a natural resistance to get that kind of treatment if a person still feels healthy. But doctors need to prescribe and use these products early in the disease progression, as it can dramatically reduce the risk for us of hospitalizations at a time when our hospitals are getting very crowded with people with COVID, he said. So basically, if you are over 65 or at risk of serious complications or hospitalizations because of comorbidities, what have you, you test positive, you need to seek out and get the Lilly or the Regeneron monoclonal antibody, Azar said. Despite confidence of imminent stimulus deal, many details still need to be sorted out and timing is unclear, from CNN's Manu Raju. Even as talks over more economic relief are moving in a positive direction towards a deal, congressional leaders are still trading offers and going back and forth this morning as they try to finalize a proposal and jam it through Congress in days, several sources said. That means it's quite uncertain when Congress will vote and whether they will be able to tie the roughly $900 billion relief plan to a massive $1.4 trillion spending bill that Congress is trying to pass by the time the government runs out of money Friday night. Whether Congress will have to pass another stopgap measure to keep agencies afloat remains to be seen. The top four leaders are expected to talk this morning by phone. On a conference call with House Democrats this morning, Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi signaled that the deal isn't final yet, but offered the general outlines of the proposal. There wasn't a lot of pushback on the call, and sources described the atmosphere on the call as positive. Pelosi blamed GOP insistence on lawsuit protections for businesses and others as a reason why state and local aid was not included in the proposal. She did point to other areas of the emerging proposal: school funding, vaccine distribution, transportation projects, where states and localities would get money. She contended that Democrats will push again for state and local aid when Joe Biden assumes the presidency. One Democrat, Representative Sean Casten of Illinois, urged the leadership to bring a standalone bill to fund state and local governments to show where Democrats stand, a source on the call said. And now we're going to read portions of some articles from the Texas Tribune. Here's the first. Texas has $2 billion in COVID relief funds left to spend. Advocacy groups are anxiously watching, by Juan Pablo Garnham. With only 2 weeks before the funding expires, Texas's state government still hasn't spent about a quarter of the $8 billion it received from the federal coronavirus relief bill. In March, the U.S. Department of Treasury assigned $11.24 billion to local and state governments in Texas. Almost a third of that went directly to cities and counties with more than 500,000 people, which have been quick to use it for a wide range of measures, from rent assistance programs to temperature checks at city offices. The state distributed $1.85 billion to smaller jurisdictions and has been distributing the remaining $8 billion through its health, education, and emergency agencies, among others. The funds can pay for expenses incurred only until December 30th, according to federal guidelines. Governor Greg Abbott's office said that it will use the money by that deadline, but would not give details on how. Governor Abbott has worked closely with legislative leaders and state agencies to allocate $6 billion so far, including an estimated $1.6 billion for the Department of State Health Services and the Texas Division of Emergency Management, to fund the state's response through the end of the year, said Renee Ees, a spokesperson for Governor Abbott, in a statement. With $2 billion remaining of the original funding, the state will spend every dollar by the end of the year to ensure the health and well-being of all Texans. That article continues, but we're going to move along to the next article, again from the Texas Tribune. As COVID-19 vaccine arrives in Texas's hard-hit border areas, experts warn vaccinated people could still spread the virus, by Karen Brooks Harper and Julian Aguilar. El Paso. Hospitals in some of Texas's hardest-hit border counties began vaccinating healthcare workers against COVID-19 on Tuesday, bringing what one health authority called cautious hope to a heavily Hispanic, economically distressed region whose communities have been traumatized by infections and deaths at disproportionately high rates throughout the pandemic. Some 15,600 doses of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine arrived Tuesday at hospitals in El Paso and Edinburgh, and more will land in Laredo, McAllen, Brownsville, and El Paso later this week. At UT Health RGV in Edinburgh in the Rio Grande Valley, the first doses were administered Tuesday afternoon, and a vaccination center in the medical school's lobby will usher through 400 to 500 people per day for the next several days, said Dr. John H. Krause, dean of the University of Texas Rio Grande Valley School of Medicine. In El Paso, vaccinations began hours of the doses' arrival. For a population that is especially susceptible to COVID-19, the beginning of the end could not come soon enough. People who have seen so much tragedy are going to be protected, And it's the beginning for the rest of our community to have the protection that they need, said Ryan Milkey, Director of Public Affairs for the University Medical Center of El Paso, which received 2,925 doses Tuesday. Among the first recipients in the Rio Grande Valley on Tuesday was Dr. Chelsea Chang, an internal medicine physician at UT Health RGV, who called the vaccine a blessing. I was so thrilled to be able to receive the vaccine and be a part of this movement that is, hopefully, going to be the beginning of the end of the pandemic, Chang said. It's been a challenge that none of us have ever seen before, both in the medical field and in our personal life. But while the vaccine can protect the healthcare workers from dying from the disease, COVID-19 has claimed 1,000 healthcare workers across the country, including at least 5 doctors and 20 nurses in the Rio Grande Valley alone. Authorities are warning that those around them may not be protected yet. Vaccinated people could still carry and spread the virus and should continue to wear masks, practice frequent hand washing, and socially distance until a majority of the population is inoculated, Kraus said. It's an especially important point to be making in places like Hidalgo County, where 1 in 9 households has 3 generations living together and where 1 in 3 bedrooms sleeps multiple people, said Hidalgo County Health Authority Dr. Ivan Melendez, a COVID-19 survivor who also treats patients at Mission Regional Medical Center in the Valley. For a culture that strongly values family ties and where convincing the population to socially distance has been a challenge, Melendez said, the danger of transmission is still real, even after the miracle vaccine brings cautious hope to the racked region. Again, that article continues, but we're going in the interest of time to move on to our next piece. From the Texas Tribune, an eviction moratorium expires at the end of the month, but thousands of Texans are still not able to afford rent, by Juan Pablo Garnham. It's been a rough year for Elsa Ramirez. The Houston woman lost the financial and emotional support of her husband, who was deported. She was infected with COVID-19, forcing her to isolate for 2 weeks and lose hours as a seamstress. But despite falling behind on rent, she and her 3 kids have managed to stay housed in her 2-bedroom apartment thanks to a federal eviction moratorium. With that Centers for Disease Control and Prevention directive about to end when 2020 does, though, Texans like Ramirez are again facing a dire cliff. Without relatives or friends in Houston to stay with, Ramirez has no plan for where she'll go if she loses her apartment. I owe $800, and I already got a paper from the landlord where they tell me that I can stay until December 31st, but I will be evicted after that if I don't pay, she said. The moratorium halted evictions for tenants who have tried to get rental assistance, among other requirements. Since September, it has limited evictions in a period when coronavirus infections are rising and unemployment remains high. But advocates are concerned that the protections will end while many are still struggling to make ends meet. According to the survey by the U.S. Census Bureau, more than 1.7 million households in Texas have little to no confidence that they can afford next month's rent. People of color, like Ramirez, are disproportionately affected, while 55% of white Texans say they are highly confident in being able to pay rent. Only 21% of black Texans and 14% of Hispanic Texans say the same. Congress is working on a new stimulus bill that would include an extension of the moratorium, according to the Washington Post, but it would be for 1 extra month only, and it remains unclear if there will be enough support for the measure. To be honest, we are terrified of what January 1st is going to look like, said Christina Rosales, deputy director of the advocacy organization Texas Housers, who pointed out analysis from the National Low Income Housing Coalition that estimates more than 600,000 households are at risk of eviction because of the pandemic. I don't know how the state is going to manage that kind of crisis. Texas created the Texas Eviction Diversion Program, which is still in the pilot stage in 19 counties. According to the Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs, it will be expanded to 30 communities in mid-January and statewide in late spring. I feel like all the programs are just playing catch-up, said El Paso County Justice of the Peace Stephanie Frietes, who presides over eviction cases. Even if the state is just playing catch-up, we are not ahead of the game. So what's going to happen in January? We're going to have a lot of people that are going to end up being evicted. Since the pandemic began in March, local, state, and federal officials created a patchwork of assistance programs and protections that have kept evictions low compared with previous years, as business shutdowns and continued surges of the virus pushed millions out of work. Tenants have been using their stimulus checks, unemployment benefits, and assistance from nonprofits and local governments to stay afloat. The federal moratorium doesn't prevent all evictions. Some Texas authorities have been more aggressive in limiting evictions than others. In Travis County, local officials have decided to stop eviction hearings. In comparison, Harris County landlords have filed more than 5,500 evictions since October 1st. Early in the pandemic, the county halted evictions, but it resumed them in August. Advocates think that the number of evictions filed will increase as soon as the federal moratorium ends. The moratorium didn't erase debts, and rent assistance programs have been insufficient or difficult to access. I applied for the first round of rental assistance, and I didn't get it, Ramirez said. For the second round, I'm still waiting. I don't believe I'm going to get help. This has forced her to be late on bills and use any resource to keep her family fed. During the 2 weeks she was isolated with COVID-19, she couldn't pay her cell phone or electricity bill. Friends had to leave food at her doorstep. She lived off that and canned goods that she got from food banks before getting sick. Again, we're going to move on to the next article before the previous article is finished. Our next piece is, ahead of the holiday season, Texas's ICU capacity is the lowest since the start of the pandemic, by Sean Mulcahy and Carla Astudillo. Heading into another holiday season, Texas has the fewest number of available intensive care beds to care for its sickest patients since the pandemic began, leaving healthcare experts worried hospitals could be pushed to the brink as coronavirus cases continue to climb. As of Thursday, there were 672 staffed ICU beds available statewide. That's compared with 2,100 open ICU beds available at the end of April, according to the Texas Department of State Health Services. Intensive care units were full in at least 28 hospitals spread across Texas for the week ending November 27th, according to a Texas Tribune analysis of data released by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. More than 160 hospitals reported having less than 15% of their ICU beds available during the same period. It has been a daily struggle for many months, but particularly the last few weeks, said Tom Cummins, chief medical officer for UT Health East Texas. I fully expect to see another rise over the next few weeks. The Texas Tribune analyzed data for 200 of the largest hospitals that reported four or more ICU beds or ICU patients across the state. The numbers represent seven-day averages that were self-reported to the federal government. There were 9,045 people in hospitals with COVID-19 as of Thursday, according to state data, near the record level last seen in late July. The crush of demand for ICU beds is in part because many people put off treatment for non-coronavirus illnesses in the early months of the pandemic, Cummins said. Now people are returning to emergency rooms with more severe complications for conditions like heart attacks and strokes. Hospitals with full ICUs spanned all corners of the state, from El Paso to Dallas. Among them were the 44-bed Starr County Memorial Hospital in the small border town of Rio Grande City and the 444-bed HCA Houston Healthcare Medical Center, just steps from Herman Park in Houston. In Texarkana, an East Texas city along the Arkansas border, Christus St. Michael Health System's 32-bed ICU has been near or at capacity in recent weeks. Dr. Lauren Robinson, Vice President of Medical Affairs, said the hospital is working to add another 8 ICU beds and hire more personnel to staff them. She worries that new cases caused by travel and large gatherings for Thanksgiving could further strain the community's medical resources. "We won't see the impact of all that travel for the next week and a half," Robinson said, adding that numbers have slowly declined over the past week. This gave hospital staff time to plan for another wave of hospitalizations, she said. In this story, it accompanies a place where you can type in Texas cities to look at the ICU capacities at hospitals. And so I've looked at area and regional hospitals around West Texas, and here's what this reports as of today. At Midland Memorial Hospital, 92.8 ICU occupancy, 43.6 the average ICU beds occupied, 47 average ICU beds available. In Odessa, Medical Center Hospital is at 66.9% ICU capacity. 8.7 is the average ICU beds occupied. 13 is the average ICU beds available. At Odessa Regional Medical Center, 46% ICU occupancy. The average ICU beds occupied is 23.4. The average ICU beds available is 50.9. Looking around the West Texas region, we'll begin with Lubbock, and we'll just give you the percentages of the ICU occupancy rates. In Lubbock University Medical Center, ICU occupancy, 97.5%. Covenant Medical Center, 93.3% ICU occupancy. Lubbock Heart Hospital, ICU occupancy, 86.3%. Covenant Specialty Hospital, ICU occupancy, 77.7%. For Abilene, Abilene Regional Medical Center, ICU occupancy, 100%. Hendrick Medical Center, ICU occupancy, 100%. And in San Angelo, Shannon Medical Center, ICU occupancy, 63.4%. Now, here's our last article of the day. From the Texas Tribune, vaccinations are underway for Texas's frontline healthcare workers. One says, "I can't believe this is happening," by Aria Jones and Karen Brooks Harper. First, a pinch in the arm. Then, a sense of relief. And at the same time, disbelief washed over Chad Bush, a North Texas healthcare worker. Bush, a CT technologist, said he was the fourth person at Methodist Dallas Medical Center and among the first people in Texas to get the coronavirus vaccine on Monday. "God, it's just, I can't believe this is happening," he said in an interview with the Texas Tribune. "And I mean, there's a sense of relief for myself, but a sense of relief for knowing that I'm doing what I can as a healthcare worker to protect other people from this disease as well." The Dallas facility received 5,850 doses delivered by UPS trucks around 8 a.m. on Monday. It was among four Texas sites that have so far received a total of 19,500 doses of the vaccine in the first phase of rollout that will put 250,000 doses into 110 Texas facilities this week, with more on the way next week, said Chris Van Dusen, spokesman for the Texas Department of State Health Services. Texas has 1.4 million doses allocated through the end of the year. Bush works every day with hospital patients who have or could have COVID-19. When he goes home, he takes care of his elderly mother who lives with him. Bush is diabetic and has high blood pressure, and his mother has chronic obstructive pulmonary disease and emphysema, meaning they're both at high risk for complications from the virus. Bush is scheduled for his second dose of the vaccine, which is necessary to strengthen its effectiveness and extend the inoculation past a few months, on January 4th. I cannot explain. The amount of stress that has been lifted off me having this today is enormous, Bush said. I fully expected it not to happen today. I just thought there'd be some logistical issues, something, because I wanted it so bad, and I guess I was preparing myself for the worst. The virus has claimed the lives of nearly 24,000 Texans and nearly 300,000 nationwide, and the anxious anticipation of the vaccine's arrival cannot be overstated, particularly among Texas's frontline health workers, who will be in the first tier of recipients who sacrificed their own safety to save the lives of others, even as they deal with their own tragedies. Texas Governor Greg Abbott attended a White House briefing on Monday with other state and federal officials on Operation Warp Speed, the public-private effort initiated by the U.S. government to get the vaccine developed and distributed, his office said in a statement. As Texas begins distributing the COVID-19 vaccines across the state, I thank President Trump and the federal leaders who worked diligently to ensure the success of Operation Warp Speed, Abbott said. These vaccines will save lives and play a crucial role in our efforts to mitigate the spread of COVID-19 and bring hospitalizations down in our communities. After the first person at the Dallas hospital went behind the privacy screen to get the vaccine, which was approved by federal authorities on Friday, a crowd erupted with cheers and clapping, Bush said. Over the next 36 hours, Methodist expects to vaccinate between 500 and 600 staff members. I've been in healthcare a long time. I've seen a lot of important events. Jim Scogan, the Methodist Health System CEO said, I can't imagine a more important event than today. I can't imagine a more special early Christmas present on behalf of the communities that we serve and the staff that we serve throughout North Texas. In Central Texas, a delivery truck was carrying the COVID-19 vaccine, arrived at UT Health Austin Dell Medical Center a few hours after sunrise. In San Antonio, UT Health San Antonio received 5,800 doses early Monday and plans to begin vaccinating 1,000 healthcare workers a day starting Tuesday. In Houston, the vaccine showed up before dawn at MD Anderson Cancer Center. This has been a tough year and a lot of work, said Dr. Jason Bowling, who works with infection prevention at UT Health San Antonio. People are tired, but I think this is a nice way to kind of inspire people that we're making progress. And at this point, I'm going to end this article and put a wrap on today's coronavirus update for this Wednesday, December 16th, 2020, from the Recording Library of West Texas. Coming up, we'll be bringing you music of the season, some Christmas music, which will take us to the top of the hour at 2 o'clock, at which time we'll begin national news from USA Today. At 3 o'clock, we'll, of course, have the local news from the Midland and Odessa newspapers, and here are some of the articles that we'll be reading at that time. From the front page of the Midland Reporter-Telegram, government, city council approves small business grant program. Election, Booker upsets Fuller, Joyner wins in District 4. Local, valuable photos, Arrington's Ansel Adams pictures sell for $6.433 million. Crime. Midland Police Department is investigating shooting death. From the Odessa American's front page. Looks like an Odessa sweep. City Council has big changes coming in 2021. And capacity ordinance could be lifted Friday. Medical pros caution Odessans not to relax. Those articles and more coming up at 3 o'clock, and then at 6, more news with the Wall Street Journal. As always, thank you for joining us today. We'll be back tomorrow afternoon at 1. Be well and have a great...
Coronavirus Briefs. The West Texas Food Bank has resumed business with a few modifications, according to a press release. The senior pantry at the Midland location will continue to operate 10 a.m. to noon, Tuesday and Thursday, and the emergency pantry at the Odessa facility will continue normal operations on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Clients will be asked to drive through, and WTFB staff will load groceries into their vehicles.
Starting Thursday on the Noon Book Hour, we begin The Puppy That Came for Christmas, How a Dog Brought One Family the Gift of Joy by Megan Ricks. All Megan Ricks ever wanted was a baby, yet month after month, Megan's dreams were dashed. Would her life ever feel complete? Megan and her husband Ian found a surprising answer when they began training golden retriever pups to become service dogs for people with disabilities, but opening their homes and hearts up to Emma and then Freddie, only to have each move on after 6 months, eventually took its own toll. Megan and Ian didn't know if they could continue. Then, one Christmas, little Traffy came along and stayed. An instant international bestseller, this book is a heartwarming and inspirational story that will captivate. The Puppy That Came for Christmas by Megan Ricks, starting Thursday at noon and Friday at 2 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland, Odessa area. It's 49 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-30s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the mid-40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Practicing real hard, yeah. Clients, you've been rehearsing real hard now. So Santa, bring your new saxophone, right? Everybody out there been good or what? Oh, that's not many, not many. You guys in trouble out here.
Yeah, you better watch out. You better not cry. You better not bow. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list, he's checking it twice.
Santa Claus is coming. Claus is coming to town.
Shepherd boy, do you hear what I hear? A song, high above the tree, with a voice as big as the sea, with a voice as big as the sea. Said the shepherd boy to the mighty king, what I know, in your palace warm, mighty king, do you know what I know?
a child shivers in the cold. Let us bring him silver and gold. Let us bring him silver and gold. Said the king to the people everywhere, listen to what I say. For peace, people everywhere, listen to what I say. The child sleeping in the night, he will bring us goodness and light. He will bring us goodness and light.
Beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go.
Take a look in the 5 and 10,
glistening once again
with candy canes and silver lanes aglow.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas, toys in every store.
But the prettiest sight to see is the holly that will be on your own front door. A pair of hop-along boots and a pistol that chooses the wish of Barney and Ben.
Dolls that'll talk and will go for a walk is the hope for Janice and Jen.
And Mom and Dad can hardly wait for school to start again.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go.
Now there's a tree in the Grand Hotel,
one in the park as well,
the sturdy kind that doesn't mind the snow.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Soon the bells will start,
and the thing that will make them ring
is the carol that you sing right within your heart.
A pair of hop-along boots and a pistol that shoots
is the wish of Barney and Ben.
Dolls that'll talk and we'll go for a walk
is the hope for Janice and Jen.
And the Mom and Dad can hardly wait for school to start again. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Soon the bells will start, and the thing that will make them ring is the carol that you sing right within your heart.
Santa baby, slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa baby, and hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa baby, an outer space convertible to light blue. I'll wait up for you, dear Santa baby, and hurry down the chimney tonight. Think of all the fun I've missed. Think of all the fellas that I haven't kissed. Next year I could be oh so good if you'll check off my Christmas list. Biddle, biddle, Santa honey, I want a yacht, and really that's not a lot. I've been a an angel all year since a baby, and hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa cutie, there's one thing I really do need, the deed to a platinum mine. Santa cutie, and hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa baby, and fill my stocking with a duplex and checks, sign your X on the line. Santa baby, and hurry down the chimney tonight. Come and trim my Christmas tree with some decorations bought at Tiffany's. I really do believe in you. Let's see if you believe in me. Ba-do-ba-do, Santa baby, forgot to mention one little thing, a ring. I don't mean a phone, Santa baby, and hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry down the chimney tonight.
Together with you. Outside the snow is falling and friends are calling you. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. Giddy-up, 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 let's go. Let's look at the show. We're riding in a wonderland of snow. Giddy-up, 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 it's grand. Just holding your hand. We're gliding along with the song of a wintry fairyland. Our cheeks are nice and rosy and comfy, cozy are we. We've snuggled close together like two birds of a feather would be. Let's take that road before us and sing a chorus or two. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. There's a birthday party at the home of Farmer Gray. It'll be the perfect ending of a perfect day. We'll be singing the songs we love to sing without a single stop. At the fireplace where we'll watch the chestnuts pop. Pop, pop, pop. There's a happy feeling nothing in the world can buy. When they pass around the coffee and the pumpkin pie, it'll nearly be like a picture print by Courier and Ives. These wonderful things are the things we remember all through our lives. These wonderful things are the things we remember all through our lives. Just hear those sleigh bells jingling, ring, ting, tingling too. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. Outside the snow is falling and friends are calling you. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. Giddy-up, 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 let's go. Let's look at the show. We're riding in a wonderland of snow. Giddy-up, 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 it's grand. Just holding your hand. We're gliding along with the song of a wintry fairyland. Nice and rosy and comfy, cozy are we. We've snuggled close together like two birds of a feather would be. Let's take that road before us and sing a chorus of two. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. Lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you.
Weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. Since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Shows no signs of stopping. I brought some corn for popping. Lights are turned way down low. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you really hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. The fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbye. But as long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you really hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. Oh, the fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbye. But as long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 49 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-30s. Then tomorrow clear with a high in the low 60s. Tomorrow night clear with a low in the mid 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.